The Tom Woods Show, episode 1325.
Prepare to set fire to the index card of allowable opinion. Your daily dose of liberty education starts here. The Tom Woods Show.
Homeschooling families, it's the middle of the academic year, and that's when a lot of families decide to ditch the curriculum they're using and try something better. Well, if you want to maintain your mental health and give your kids an outstanding education, then check out the self-taught Ron Paul curriculum. And when you use my link, you get $160 worth of free bonuses as well. My link is ronpaulhomeschool.com. Hi, everybody. Tom Woods here. You may hear one or more of my children in the background. I'm recording this particular episode at an unusual time of day, so you may hear them playing. But anyway, I've got a great one for you today with our old friend Brian McClanahan. And I'm going to describe for you once I bring Brian on exactly what's going on. But the long and the short of it is we're taking an article. This is going to sound a little bit convoluted, but we're taking an article from Above the Law, which is a well-known legal website. And this article is criticizing a constitutional law exam by a professor, Josh Blackman. And this exam asked some questions that the student thinks, or this critic anyway, thinks are controversial and just meant to provoke and of no value other than mere white supremacist provocation. So that's the intellectual level of the article. But actually, it turns out when you look at this exam, it's full of really important thought-provoking questions, the kind of questions, therefore, that are never asked. So, you know, of course, when an NPC, look that up if you don't know what that is, encounters actual thought-provoking, important questions, you know, that really get to the heart of the regime, well, naturally, it's like a crucifix in front of Dracula. So we're going to take a look at this and have some fun. Brian McClanahan, as you know, is the author of many books, including Nine Presidents Who Screwed Up America, How Alexander Hamilton Screwed Up America, I think is the name of that. Let me double-check that. Yes, that's right. The Founding Fathers' Guide to the Constitution, The Politically Incorrect Guide to the Founding Fathers, a bunch of great books. He's got the McClanahan Academy, where he teaches courses in history. He also teaches courses in history at libertyclassroom.com. He's just a great all-around guy. He's got his PhD from the University of South Carolina, where he was the last PhD student of the great, brilliant Southern historian Clyde Wilson. Brian, welcome back.
Tom, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Oh, this is going to be a good one. I'm telling you, this column is so bad. And it's so bad not just because the content is bad, although it is. It's that the style, the tone, like it's all written like it's a fifth grader writing. It's like a temper tantrum. It's all sledgehammer. There's nothing clever about it. It's just, oh, this is such an extremist that I have to deal with. And can you believe he says this? And I, my gosh, this is really, and Above the Law is actually, respected, somewhat respected left of center legal website. It was actually founded by a guy I went to college with. So it's just an embarrassment all around. So I've already told people about, you know, I gave them the name and what the gist of it is. So, of course, we're going to link to this column at tomwoods.com/1325 so that you can read it if for some reason you want to. or you can follow along with us if that's what you'd like to do. So what's going on in the column? Again, I told people that the idea of it is his professor made him deal with Lincoln in a non-caricatured way, you know, like an actual real Lincoln, so to speak.
Right.
And he's very upset about this. So let me start off by just reading, because he's just outraged that anybody should have to be exposed to anything off the 3x5 card of allowable opinion. He's just appalled at this. And he's talking about Josh Blackman at South Texas College of Law. And he says, Blackman is a well-known Federalist Society hero prof who constantly pushes the minority views of that organization on students and non-lawyers who don't know that they're listening to an extremist. Now, extremist is a word only a pansy and a loser uses. Because extremely what? If it's extremely awesome, what's wrong with that? So extremist is just dumb. He'll never, ever, ever say that anybody in critical legal studies or any aspect of left-wing lawyerdom is an extremist. Never, ever. So, and then he says, if Blackman was teaching while I was a student, I would have actively sought out his class. As a student, I found it useful to hear their drivel straight from the source. Drivel. So, okay, drivel. So, yeah, the bizarre and implausible idea that we were supposed to have a decentralized government. Where'd we ever get that kind of drivel from? You know, we must have just made that up. So then he says, the penalty from learning these from these guys, and here's the thing, this is what we want to talk about, is that occasionally you get exam questions like this. He says, Blackmon posted this constitutional law question on his blog, so you know he's proud of it, which makes it even worse. So he's proud of making people think. And so it's part one, the impeachment of President Lincoln. And then our author says, sigh, oh, because don't you know that Lincoln we're just supposed to worship? So then So let me, and I'm going to give you, you don't have so much time to talk, Brian, but I just to frame this, here's what the question says. The year is 1867. Against all odds, President Abraham Lincoln survived an assassination attempt 2 years earlier. However, his popularity soon plummeted. Members of Lincoln's own party turned against him for failing to aggressively promote Reconstruction in the South. Soon, the House of Representatives approved four articles of impeachment against Lincoln. Now the Senate is holding a trial over those four articles. You are a law clerk for Chief Justice Salmon Chase, who presides over the impeachment of the president, of the impeachment trial of the president. First, Chief Justice Chase asks you to assess the strengths and weaknesses of the four articles of impeachment. Second, he asks you to address a fifth issue that arose outside of the impeachment trial. Your memorandum addressing all five issues should not be more than 1,000 words. So the articles of impeachment then continue, and we'll get to that in a second. But his reaction is immediately the victimology reaction. It says, I know it's Federalist Society canon, canon spelled C-A-N-N-O-N. I wish there were a Federalist Society canon.
Isn't that great?
Yeah. To assume everybody is white or wants to be. But I would be remiss if I didn't point out that this is exactly the kind of question prompt that unfairly biases the exam against non-white students. So he says, I'm taken away from thinking about con law and I'm forced to think about how my professor is trying to be racist towards me in his stupid exam. He's trying to be racist towards you by talking about impeaching an obvious white supremacist. If there ever were a white supremacist, it wouldn't be Steve King. It would be Abraham Lincoln. How much clearer could the guy be? All right. Now, Brian, that is the longest preamble to bring a guest on I've ever had. I apologize. I appreciate your patience. You can jump in now.
Well, I mean, you hit a lot of the highlights here. But first of all, you're right. This article is written so poorly. This guy's an attorney, he says. I mean, he is not even coherent most of the time. This accusation that he makes that somehow this is making him think about being racist towards him. How? He never cites how. But you're right about Lincoln. And one thing I want to point out about this idea of impeaching Lincoln, this is not too far-fetched. You know, had Lincoln survived in 1865— it's not too far-fetched to think that there couldn't have been the radicals in Congress upset with his slow prodding process towards Reconstruction and would have wanted him out of office. When you think about this issue, it's so anti-intellectual. This argument that he's using is so anti-intellectual. It's almost sad that somehow, as you said, a major legal journal will get into this. But I want to get to the articles of impeachment because it's fun to look at this and what he's saying, that the charges against Lincoln and how he thinks that this is somehow going to out him as supporting neo-Confederates. That's what he says.
I mean, right. No, but before we get there, let me just say a couple of more things about what he says before that point. Because he says, I know that anything I say against Lincoln can be used by white supremacists to justify the enslavement of my people or the continued racial disparity faced by my living family. No. It's not anything you say against Lincoln. It's quotations from Lincoln that are in favor. I mean, Lincoln repeatedly, we've gone over this, people should know this by now, he could not have been clearer in the Lincoln-Douglas debates where he stood on the issue of race. He was extremely clear about this, and all throughout the war, he's desperately looking for a place that the freed blacks can go because they certainly can't live among whites in America. He could not have been clearer about that. There's no acknowledgement that he's even aware of this aspect of Lincoln and that, you know, well, at least it's ambiguous for me because on the one hand, we have the Confederacy, but on the other hand, we have Lincoln himself. So there's that's the first thing. Then the second thing is, he says, when some fanboy of white rule, which I don't even know what they're talking about, makes a big deal about achievement gaps between white and non-white law students, know that biased questions like Blackmon's are a part of why such gaps exist. No, they're not, because part of the reason such gaps exist is the gaps in the LSAT scores. Right. Going into the law schools. It's even before you have had to suffer hearing unconventional ideas and be traumatized by that, even before that trauma, the gap in the LSAT scores is overwhelming. In fact, it was the case when somebody actually leaked the numbers out of Georgetown of how they were assessing black students to let them in, because there weren't enough black students who were scoring. I forget what the cutoff was, but whatever the cutoff was, there weren't enough blacks in the entire country scoring at that level that could fill up the Georgetown class. So Obviously there is a disparity going into it. So this is not invented. And then secondly, when you look at standardized tests and you say, well, pick out which of these questions, you know, whether they're, you know, like a brain teaser type question or question about Shakespeare, just a general intelligence test. And you say, pick out the questions that you think are culturally biased, and you pick them out. Those are the ones where there's the least disparity. So, So this is all, that doesn't help us. So let's go on now to the, I had to say that. So feel free to jump in on anything at all and then go into the article's impeachment.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you're right on all of this. And the idea that somehow by criticizing Abraham Lincoln, you're dog whistling is, you know, a term that he didn't use that, but you're saying that you're appealing. I guess this guy's never read Lerone Bennett, which is, you know, the idea of forced into glory, Abraham Lincoln's white dreams, written by an African-American, right? So, I mean, there is this entire canon of literature that's very critical of Abraham Lincoln coming from the black community. So are they signaling white supremacists? I mean,
not to mention, I've heard plenty of white nationalists who don't at all like the Southern secession because it was breaking up a white country. And then they listen to Abraham Lincoln's nationalism and his comments on race, and they say, sounds pretty good to me.
That's right.
Which is why the Ku Klux Klan was not waving the Confederate battle flag. It was waving the U.S. flag. What else would it wave?
Right. It's a completely ridiculous argument, but it appeals to people that don't know anything. Oh, you're going to criticize Abraham Lincoln? Well, obviously. Then you're for slavery. I mean, it's such a stupid juvenile argument that unfortunately so many people have, but it's almost not even worth commenting on.
I bet you like Saddam Hussein too. You tyrant lover. You know, it's right. That sort of thing. You must love Saddam, or I bet you you're an Assad lover because you want to remove troops from Syria. You're an Assad lover. How low can your IQ get? Right. You know, like it's a good thing that it's a separate part of the brain that reminds these people to breathe, because you know, this wouldn't work.
Right. It's so sad that we have to even respond to this. I actually get tired of doing it because it's commonplace. And of course, social media makes it even magnifies it 1,000 times that you have these people running around. But I mean, take an example. You know, we're both, you know, Michael Malice and the things that he does with history. It's so funny when you see this stuff. But this is a nice example of how easy it is to dupe people to think that Hitler built the Berlin Wall. Right. I mean, it's because you have this. And it's sad when you have to constantly respond to these things. But you know, there are several major historical issues to get into. And one, when we get in the articles, that's so good. I mean, it's so juicy. It knocks everything out he says. So I want to get in these articles so we can start doing that.
Yeah, good.
It ruins his entire argument. So do you want to read the article? And two is the one that has it.
Okay. It says, Abraham Lincoln. So this is one of these fictional articles of impeachment that was on the exam. Abraham Lincoln, President of the United States, on the first day of January in the year of our Lord, 1863, at Washington in the District of Columbia, in violation of the Constitution and laws of the United States, issued the Emancipation Proclamation. This executive order declared, quote, that all persons held as slaves, unquote, within the rebellious states, quote, are and henceforward shall be free, unquote. Unmindful of the high duties of his oath of office and of the requirements of the Constitution, that he should take care that the laws be faithfully executed, and his duties as commander-in-chief, Abraham Lincoln hereby violated the Constitution.
Right. And then but the paragraph that his comment is so good. So he calls this libertarian gaslighting, right? This is libertarian gaslighting. Because this Lincoln was a tyrant angle, he says, is surprisingly popular among this set of legal thinkers. Now, first of all, I'm not familiar with Black, but I don't think he's really much of a libertarian thinker. Are you familiar with him? I don't know.
No, I'm not. And secondly, among Federalist Society aligned professors, almost none of these people would be caught dead advocating anything like this. Kidding me?
Yeah, because you know, every time we go to Mises, there's a whole room full of Federalist Society professors.
Yeah, right.
I mean, this is the whole thing. Don't you know? I mean, it's so funny that he says these things because that's what these people think. But he says, you know, this makes you think that you're hardcore because you're criticizing Abraham Lincoln and executive overreach. But what you're really doing, he says, is supporting slavery. Now, Let's look at this issue in the Emancipation Proclamation. This is when I wrote my Nine Presidents book. This is, as you might imagine, everyone wanted to talk about Lincoln because he's in the book, right? So you write a book with Lincoln in it, and that's the first chapter everyone goes to. And they say, well, gosh, how can you say he violated the Constitution with the Emancipation Proclamation? I mean, this thing is so important. I said, well, look, there was an abolitionist Supreme Court, former Supreme Court justice that said so, right? So how is this, you have an abolitionist Supreme Court justice who dissented in Dred Scott saying that the Emancipation Proclamation violated the Constitution. Now, obviously, he's really secretly pro-slavery. He secretly wants the South to secede so that he can go down there, I guess.
And who is this?
Benjamin Robbins Curtis. Benjamin Robbins Curtis wrote an opinion against the Emancipation Proclamation because he said it was illegal. Good idea, but illegal. The president has no authority to do this. So obviously, the author of this piece doesn't even know that, and most people don't. But it's clear that their historical knowledge is about zero on this particular issue. This is something that people at the time talked about quite a lot. Does the president have complete control in a wartime emergency? And this is actually an issue. We're talking about Donald Trump and emergency powers. Lincoln was the first to really claim emergency powers in the way that he did it. So this was a war measure. He's using executive authority in ways that were unprecedented in American history to that point. Now, of course, we've had presidents go beyond that now. But Lincoln was certainly violating the Constitution. It's not pro-slavery to say that this act, the Emancipation Proclamation, was constitutionally problematic. It was dubious. I don't know how you can get anything other than that, particularly if you throw in Robbins Curtis. So that's the fun one to me. Oh, yeah, you think that only pro-slavery people were against the war. How about Benjamin Robbins Curtis? Here he says it's unconstitutional to do this. So it's a lot of fun to point that out because it blows up his entire argument. This somehow is just gaslighting or, you know, a dog whistle for these neo-Confederates or pro-slavery people.
Right. Now, that is an excellent point. Now, likewise, when Roe versus Wade came out, the New Republic, which was a center-left magazine, wrote that this is a terrible decision, obviously unconstitutional, but we like the outcome, mm-hmm. but the decision was unconstitutional. So when I looked at this example, this particular so-called article of impeachment, I took it as the point of it is that it's shocking, precisely because we take for granted that because this is such a good thing to do, we don't even think about the legal aspect. So he's deliberately, yes, he is trying to shock you. That's right. I mean, it would be like taking, there are any number of landmark cases in American history where you could actually say, all right, look, a lot of people like this outcome, but was it correctly decided? Is this the role of the courts to do this, or is it the role of the president to do that? That's why it exists. It's to shock you into thinking about it.
Is it not the role of a judge to have that position or a lawyer? Is it not your proper role to think of these sides and think of these issues? I mean, this is your job. If you're sitting on the bench, you have these issues in front of you. Is that not your job to look at the Constitution, look at Article 2, and say, does the president have this kind of authority? That's what we want out of our judges. We don't want people just, you know, of course, we have political appointees now. But we want people to go up there and actually think critically about these issues and be objective. So I don't see the the problem here. It's getting people, as you said, to think about something that is outside the box, but did at the time have, I think, certain merit. I mean, there were people that were questioning, does the president have these type of expansive war powers? Can the president do whatever he wants because it's in a wartime situation? That was Lincoln's argument. I mean, look, I can do this because it's best subduing the enemy. And this is how we're going to subdue the enemy, by issuing the Emancipation Proclamation. Now, fast forward to any war in the modern era. I mean, think about, George W. Bush, or think about the Patriot Act, all these things. I'm going to do this to best subdue the enemy. So would the author of this piece be for the Patriot Act then? Because, I mean, obviously, the reasoning is it's to best subdue the enemy. Or would they be against any other violation of civil liberties or civil rights if it's to best subdue the enemy? Would he be in favor of Japanese internment camps? That's to best subdue the enemy. So the line is clear from Lincoln to the 20th century and the Emancipation Proclamation. That's the point I made in the book. And once I explained that, oh, yeah, I never really thought about it like that. But there were individuals at the time who opposed it, and they were abolitionists. It wasn't that they were in favor of slavery, but they were certainly against the expansion of executive power.
Now, I can, I mean, just for clarification purposes, I can see a libertarian, let's say a Spoonerite libertarian who really doesn't care about the Constitution one way or the other, who just right. takes the position that, look, anybody can do anything that is morally acceptable and right. and let the precedent issue, you know, resolve itself. Yes, maybe it set a bad precedent, but at this particular moment, at this particular time, it is good for the president to free the slaves or something. I could see somebody saying that I don't really care about the constitutional procedure aspect of it. I just want liberty to be championed. I could get that. But the thing is, and in fact, that more or less is my opinion, but this guy lives in the constitutional framework. He went to law school. These are all his working assumptions, that the Constitution is supposed to be the thing that defines what the powers of everybody is. He's the one who's stuck in that. I'm not. I can say, well, in this case, so much the worse for the Constitution. I don't think he can. Yet he somehow is trying to, and it's not – I don't think it's quite working for him. So, well, all right. Well, let's go – why don't we go on to – should we do article – is there any other articles that we want to read?
Article 3. Yeah, I mean the Article 3 where he talks about the seizure of all the private property, railroads, trains, all these things. We can go into that too, because I mean, it's, he calls this also libertarian gaslighting, that you know, this is bad.
Yeah. So Article 3, I'll just read it. Abraham Lincoln, President of the United States, in violation of the Constitution and laws of the United States, ordered the seizure of all railroads. This executive order declared that the, quote, Secretary of War is hereby authorized and directed to take possession of all or such of the railroads, trains, and other property or any part thereof as he may deem necessary in the interests of national defense and to operate or to arrange for the operation thereof and to do all things necessary for or incidental to such operation, unquote. Unmindful of the high duties of his oath of office and of the requirements of the Constitution that he should take care that the laws be faithfully executed and his duties as Commander-in-Chief, Abraham Lincoln hereby violated the Constitution. All right, well, now, again, is it just because it's Lincoln, so therefore you're not allowed to say anything that we're – then again, then you're – I think you're just too delicate to be a lawyer, because it would be like me. I can't stand the sight of blood. I shouldn't be a surgeon. If this right. is going to make you that uncomfortable that your emotions are going to take over and you're going to write a temper tantrum style article because you're just shocked that you're even being asked to think about it, when, as you say, there are serious issues of war powers being raised here. Does right. the president have the power to do this? And remember, of course, Harry Truman later seized the steel mills.
That's right.
And this is
current. I mean, Trump is talking about building a wall with through emergency powers. I mean, all this stuff is current. And, you know, one of the things I'll point out about this entire thing, though, is I think the there is some historical inaccuracy in these charges. I think it would have been more accurate for Blackmun to say, okay, here are the articles of impeachment. Lincoln didn't go far enough in the radical agenda. And so, you know, he vetoed the Civil Rights Act, or he vetoed, because this is what they brought Johnson up on charges for, essentially. I mean, it's Johnson was vetoing legislation, but he's got to get rid of the guy. That would have been more accurate for Lincoln. I mean, I think these charges the radicals wouldn't have come up with this stuff, but maybe if the Democrats took back control of Congress, they would have done something. But you're right. I mean, this gets into war powers and how the president, what we expect of the presidency, what we think the president should do. And I think these are good conversations to have. Somehow, though, this is deemed to be racist and anti-intellectual. I just don't get it. I don't get it at all. But you're right. This is a rant. It's simply a little temper tantrum rant, so that we can he can look like he's this great legal scholar. I just don't get it.
He says Blackmun is using the news hook of President Trump possibly getting impeached to slip in some extreme views about Abraham Lincoln. He probably thinks he's clever. I think he's an ass. That's a great. I mean, that's the level of writing we're talking
right.
about here.
Yeah, it's terrible.
Yeah,
it's terrible.
So then he says, should we do question five?
Well, question five, it's interesting how he phrases question five, because that's the end.
And oh, no, yeah, it is question five. It's a question. Yeah, it's an exam question. Okay, yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's the end. So he gives you these articles of impeachment, and then he throws this in there, and he's critical of Blackmun for doing this. So, yeah, read question five, because I think it shows how absolutely much of a lunatic the author of the piece is. I mean, this guy's a lunatic, so it's funny to me that he would criticize this.
I'm going to read you question five, because I want people to see exactly what our critic here is outraged by. So After the conclusion of the trial, the Senate votes to convict President Lincoln on all four articles of impeachment. He is removed from office. However, Lincoln maintains his innocence and argues that he did not violate the Constitution. The Secretary of the Treasury suspends payment of the president's compensation. In response, Lincoln sues the Secretary of the Treasury for his salary in the Court of Claims. The Court of Claims dismisses Lincoln's suit because Lincoln is no longer president. Lincoln, who maintains that he is still the lawful president, appeals that judgment to the Supreme Court. I find this fascinating. I think it's a fascinating scenario, don't you?
It is. I do. I think
it's a great exam question. Yeah. So then he goes on to say, I mean, now, by the way, it's not an exam question for somebody who wants to succeed by memorizing the answers and regurgitating them on the exam, which I have a funny feeling is what we're dealing with here. So then the next paragraph of the question reads as follows. Chief Justice Chase confides in you that he did not think Lincoln violated the Constitution and that the Senate got it wrong. He is on the fence whether he should write an opinion finding that Lincoln remains the president. The Chief Justice asks you to write about the pros and cons of such a decision. So then our author is outraged that you should have to consider both sides because Lincoln, the white supremacist Lincoln, is the one we obviously need to support here. We can't even have a fun thought experiment. So let me just read this part. He says, how should you, the non-white student, handle this question? Well, I would hope with intellectual dignity like any other student. He says, you basically have three options. A, answer the question straight up and do your best to ignore the insult inherent in the prompt. There is nothing in any way meant to insult him in this question. I just read it to the audience. They all heard every word of that question. Secondly, B, pay the tax, because he refers to when he's required to think unconventional thoughts. This is a tax being imposed on him, right? He says, pay the tax and answer the question while making it clear you think the question is stupid and offensive. Yeah, so but by the way, if this guy were a lawyer, would you want to take him on as your lawyer?
Yeah.
I mean, suppose you had a highly unconventional case. How's he going to handle it? Right? And then C, and if you have little children in the car, turn it down for 2 seconds. Tell Professor Blackman to kiss your black ass. So first of all, apparently non-white and black are synonymous because he started this whole thing off with you being non-white. But can you believe that's the way I mean, this is not, I don't know.
It's almost, you can't even say anything about it. It's so stupid that it doesn't even, again, it doesn't really even elicit a response.
But I have to read this one last thing. He says, the third option where you do that thing I just said, you know, you tell him to kiss you. He says the third option is righteous. But listen to this. When dealing with the kind of fragile white man who would ask this question in the first place, you can expect stiff consequences. First of all, you'd have no consequences because he would be afraid to do anything to you. But even if you did, the idea that this guy is fragile, this guy has stones. Are you kidding me? In this day and age, having the guts to ask a question like that, knowing that he's going to be shunned professionally and ridiculed on all the mainstream sites. You call that fragile? I mean, talk about the pot calling the kettle black. This guy is as fragile as anyone I have ever read in my life.
Yeah, it's looking for a boogeyman behind every corner. There's always somebody. It's this victim mentality. And unfortunately, that's anti-intellectual. All this entire response is anti-intellectual. I we all went through school and we had professors that thought things that we didn't like. And but you responded to their response. It actually helped you think better. And he says at the beginning, well, these things helped me. I would have sought this guy out. But you would have responded in a hysterical way. That's not helping you sharpen your pencil. You're just being being hysterical. So I don't get it. You know, I had a professor who was a political science professor who would say things like, I swear to Marx when he'd make statements. And it was fun to argue with the guy because it really helped you think about what you really thought about things. And that's the real college environment. So this prompt is wonderful. I think it's one of the best things I've ever seen. Now, again, I could quibble with some of the historical context but certainly I don't think there's any doubt that had Lincoln survived 1865, he would have run into stiff opposition from the Republicans in Congress. And there's actually a book out. The title's escaping me right now. It's a What to Do with the Negro. And the author concludes that had Lincoln survived, he was trying to put together kind of a centrist right party. He would have abandoned the radicals. He would have gotten these former Southerners into this party and they would have controlled the government. And it would have been, reconstruction would have been very mild. Nothing would have really happened. So this is not far-fetched to think that maybe something like this could have happened. And I think it's a wonderful historical. It has good historical prompt. It makes you think. It's great. But of course, that's not what you can do in modern PC society.
And at the end, he says, all these kind of questions that he's endured over his education and life generally, he says, have been used as fuel to never stop fighting the Federalist Society and the white supremacy they pass off as, quote, logic. I mean, that's terrible writing. You can put logic in quotation. That's just terrible writing. But yeah. The idea that the Federalist Society is white supremacist, which law do they favor that would give whites legal privileges over blacks? That's the what I want to know. That's because that would make whites supreme over blacks. What would be an example of that? Of course, there are no examples of that.
Well, and we use these words so often now, they've lost all their context. Use the word racist so often. What does that even mean anymore? They've lost all their context. So this is the real problem with all of these pieces like this, because it's really taken if a person, a real racist, would be, and that would be Abraham Lincoln, by the way, a real racist.
I know.
or virtually anybody in the United States in 1860 or 1865, and it's sad that we've gotten to a point where we can't even have a real discussion about anything, because you're going to be name called. And I know that if he picks up on this, he's going to do that. But I would appeal to people that would maybe read this to think, Am I being a baby by being this sensitive to things? There's the Alistair MacIntyre, After Virtue, where he gets into this emotivism. All this is emotivism. We're allowing our emotions to control everything we do now. And there's no logic. There's no logic in any of this. There's no logic in his arguments. None of his arguments make any sense. He doesn't back any of this up. When he says things like all this in the first paragraph you read, when he talks about how this is I have to support white supremacists by attacking Lincoln. How? I mean, where's the evidence? Where is the evidence? He doesn't give any. If this was a lawyer, as you said, you would never hire this guy. He'd lose every single case. So it's just a really bad article. But again, great podcast fodder. I mean, it's fun to talk about.
Yeah, it is. And when I saw this thing, I thought, no, not letting this pass. It's unbelievable that somebody so unrigorous could actually go through elite schools and then come out spouting this. I mean, he can't even say for us now, look, I will grant you that there are obviously contained within this question some important legal concepts that any law student has to reckon with at one time or another in constitutional law. However, I think this particular presentation of it is so obviously designed to be provocative as to forfeit some of the moral high ground it initially had by raising these issues. What was so hard about that? Right. What was so hard about that? You could say that if you were really that upset about the question. This is just ridiculous.
Well, the one that he left out, Article 4. If you click on, there's a link at the bottom of the article.
I didn't click. I should have.
Left out. Now, I'm going to read Article 4 because this one's really juicy. I'm surprised he left this out because it is. You want to talk about the guts to put something out there? Oh, my gosh, Tom. Article 4, Abraham Lincoln, President of the United States, in violation of the Constitution and laws of the United States, commanded a war against the Confederate States of America. Congress never issued a declaration of war against the Confederate States of America.
Oh!
unmindful of the high duties of his oath of office and the requirements of the Constitution that he should take care that the laws be faithfully executed and his duties as commander-in-chief, Abraham Lincoln hereby violated the Constitution. That is so profound. And he didn't even get into that. Because he's basically saying Lincoln didn't recognize secession.
Right.
Lincoln didn't recognize secession. So he waged a war, or he did. I mean, there was legal secession, and he didn't have the authorization from Congress to go to war against the South. Now, that gets into the whole issue of whether we had a rebellion, whether we had a legal entity in the South, whether it was a de jure government, Confederate States of America. I mean, this is a big issue, and it's a wonderful question. And to do it in 1,000 words, I mean, gosh, people could write whole books on this idea. So they have. But that's a juicy one. I'm surprised he left this off, because to me, that would be more offensive than Article 3. If you're really somebody who's so offended by the fact that you might have had a Confederate States that exists, I don't know. He doesn't get an Article 1. He doesn't address that, you know, Lincoln suspended habeas corpus. He doesn't talk about that, which was true. I mean, so this particular law exam is a nice look at executive abuse. And I think that people should be reading this and saying, yeah, we should really talk about these things in 2019. You've got the left. They don't like Donald Trump. When Obama was in office, you got the right was criticizing Obama for these things. Well, I mean, I'm an equal opportunity butcher. I'll go after them both. And they're both awful on these things. So, but this is actually very, if you're going to be consistent constitutionally, you got to think about these questions. And most people don't want to do it because it's all about politics.
Well, I'm looking at the background of this Josh Blackmun, whom I was not familiar with before. And I think he is a libertarian.
Is he?
I mean, he's an adjunct scholar at the Cato Institute, but adjunct scholar could mean, you know, you showed up once and you wrote three paragraphs for them. So I don't know what his relationship there is. But looking at his books on Obamacare, he looks like he's – so – and it says, Josh was selected by Forbes magazine for the 30 under 30 in law and policy. He's young.
Mm-hmm. He is young, yeah.
That's crazy that I don't know this guy.
Yeah, but you need to have him on your show.
That guy has some, you know, as I said, he's got some you-know-whats, that guy. All right, listen, the other thing I want to do is let people know that you just hit episode number 200 of the Brian McClanahan Show. And that is amazing because that show is just Brian talking. There are no guests on the Brian McClanahan Show, at least up to now.
No, so, there's no guests. Right. And I don't know if I'm going to have them. I'm waffling on that, whether I want to do it or not. Because I record at 4 o'clock in the morning. So guests don't like to be up at 4 o'clock.
You have to find somebody in a time zone somewhere where that works. You have to only interview people in New Zealand or something. Like, I don't know.
Yeah, we're going to just change it to New Zealand politics or, you know. Here's the American talking about, good day, mate. We're going to talk about Australian politics today. And
well, you know, I respect the Brian McClanahan Show all the more knowing that it's – I knew you did it early, but that's just stupid. That's just stupid. That's crazy.
And you're now videoing it. This is I saw that.
I'd want people to see what I look like at 4 o'clock in the morning.
Well, you know, it's strategic. I have to do things to make that work. And so I can't – you know, everybody's still sleeping, so I got to try to be very quiet. But, you know, go out to my YouTube if you want to see me do the show. A lot of people, you know, don't know I'm doing that. But get out to YouTube. You can watch me put it on. And it just knowing it's 4 o'clock in the morning when this is going on. And I've slept before. It's not like I stayed up all night and did 4 o'clock. I actually went to bed and got up and did the show. So it's difficult at times to pull it off. But I thought that, you know, when I do video them, people watch them more. If I just have the static image, nobody watching it, they don't care. But if I put it on there and I'm on the camera – I mean, people want to watch this for some reason. I don't know. Maybe it's just a train wreck, and they want to see what somebody looks like when they've just woken up.
I don't get it either. But I do want to say I listened to the Brian McClanahan Show, and when you did the episode on birthright citizenship, it was much better than my episode. Much, much more convincing.
No, Tom, that's not.
I'm telling you, Brian, it was much more convincing. I was listening to it, and I thought, oh, geez. And like you started making an argument, and I thought I didn't even know about this argument, and this is the one that kills them. Like this one. There's no coming back from. And I darn it, I didn't know about that. But, you know, look, I'm always learning things, and I definitely learn from you. So BrianMcClanahan.com is the website. But remember, it's Brian with an O, B-R-I-O-N, BrianMcClanahan.com. Sign up for his email list because guess what you'll get? Take a wild guess what you'll get. An ebook, okay? Brian learned from the best here and an audiobook. So he's even one-upped me. So you get some really great stuff from Brian. He's got the McClanahan Academy now where you can take courses with Brian. He also teaches at Liberty Classroom, so you have many opportunities to learn more from Brian. And I hope, Brian, to have you back on really, really soon because, as I told you, there's an article out there on this on secession and the Confederacy and stuff that, you know, as usual, caricatures our side of things, but that circulates, let's just say, a certain fashionable libertarian think tank in Washington, D.C., tweets out this article every 3-4 months or so, and it's such a bad article. I mean, I don't know if it's bad like the one we did today bad, but it's pretty bad. So we're going to have to take that one apart too. So thanks for doing this, Brian. I appreciate it.
Well, I appreciate you having me on, Tom. Thanks.
All right, everybody. That's going to do it for today. Tomorrow, I got Bob Murphy coming on. We're going to be talking about a topic that I have had so much demand for over the years. People have just demanded that I do an episode on this, and we're finally going to do it, and I hope it helps you. And that is all I am going to say. Actually, you know what? Doggone it, I'm going to say something else. Bob and I on the Contra Cruise this year are going to be having a debate on an important topic where we disagree. Not some trivial thing, not the pronunciation of certain words, nothing like that. Also is not on a religious topic either, but it's a topic that is a serious one on which we have a genuine disagreement. And since we're bringing as a special guest Gene Epstein on the Contra Cruise this year, we're sailing to Alaska, as you know, July 5th through the 12th. And as you know, Gene Epstein is the director of the Soho Forum, which is a wonderful debating society in New York City. And we figure, well, he's going to be a special guest already. Why not put him to work doing what he does best, which is moderating debates? Actually, everything he does his best. But anyway, as a moderator of debates, that's how he's known these days. So he's going to moderate a debate while we're sailing around Alaska. It's going to be absolutely fantastic. And we will soon be disclosing what Bob and I will be debating. But I'm going to tell you, we are not releasing the recording of this debate to the general public. There may be some super-duper special offer, you know, for super deluxe supporters of my show at some point, but the general public is not going to see this debate. This is for the people who join us on what is truly going to be a magical week, the Contra Cruise. So if you're interested, as well you should be, check it out at contracruise.com and book that cabin. I'll see you tomorrow.
Become a smarter libertarian in just 30 minutes a day. Visit TomWoods.com to subscribe to the show for free, and we'll see you next time.